This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Let's go to the phones and talk to my good friend Dan Olmsted. And Dan, I have to introduce you to say, formerly a reporter at UPI, the author of the Age of Autism series of articles and commentaries that have appeared for the last few years, some of the very best reporting about autism. And I should say, Dan, that, you know, I was going to say when the history of autism is written, your articles will be standing out. But you know, then I started realizing that, you know, when the history of autism is written, you're the guy who's going to write it. And I just want to thank you for the work that you have done with UPI. I know you will continue to cover this big story. But thank you so much for helping families like mine and for educating people about autism and helping us all understand and grasp some sort of understanding for what's going on here.
Well, thanks, Coy. I appreciate the support you've given me over these past few years. UPI basically dropped its health coverage and dropped me as sort of a consequence of that. But they have been great over the past 2.5 years that I've written these 113 columns. And in fact, I'm cooperating with them and hoping to see if I can get a publisher for sort of an anthology or adaptation of the series with some new material that I've gotten. I was just up in Amish country last week. I'm going up again tomorrow. So I'm on the case, and I think there's more to come.
Your last Age of Autism column, and like you say, well over 100 columns about autism that you've been following the story, appeared on July 18th, and you wrote that this is the story of a lifetime.
Yes, I feel very fortunate to have kind of wandered into this topic because my reporting, which has been pretty extensive now, has convinced me that autism is what you would call an environmental illness. In other words, something is coming from the outside in and affecting our children. And whether it's vaccines or some ingredient in vaccines or, you know, the pollution and chemicals that we didn't have before, or, you know, all of those things together, I think we're looking at something very troubling and toxic here that we need to get a grip on really fast, and I don't think that's happening. And so I feel very, as I say, fortunate to be one of the people that's trying to push this topic forward.
My guest is reporter Dan Olmsted. You also wrote in your last column here about four themes, and I sort of want to discuss each of these with you. Four themes of your work that really stood out as you've been following this story around the world, and like I say, doing some of the very best reporting about autism that we have seen. I just wish that we were seeing this kind of reporting in some of the major news outlets, but we're not, and that's one of the themes that you write about that we'll get to. But the first thing that you wrote about, this first theme that jumped out of you as a result of your research, tell us about that, this whole idea of doing the right kind of studies to try to understand this epidemic of autism.
Well, there's one fundamental question that has never been answered, and that question is simple. It's, what is the autism rate among never-vaccinated American children? And when I started this project, that was the first question I asked, because I thought, geez, you know, if we've got a study that shows it's, you know, vaccinated versus unvaccinated, it's the same, this has been looked at very carefully, I think I would have gone on to another topic, or at least another angle in the autism story. But it has not been done, and the reasons are kind of inexplicable and vague, and the government keeps talking about how they can't find enough never vaccinated kids, which I think I've shown not to be the case, and other people have. So it's starting to smell funny, I think, for a lot of people. I mean, let's get that study done and let the chips fall. One thing, you had J.B. Hanley on your show a couple weeks ago.
Right.
And he commissioned a survey, telephone survey, not, you know, pretending that it's scientific, but nonetheless, it found a higher rate of these neurological developmental disorders among the vaccinated kids. And out of 20,000 or so calls, he was able to find like 1,000 never vaccinated kids to do the comparison with. So this idea that we can't answer that question is suspicious.
Dan, I'm asked this question quite a lot lately by folks who say, why isn't the government doing that study? Why is it that you think they're sitting on their hands and not funding what is a very, very simple study, just to look at kids who aren't vaccinated and to say, do you have these neurological disorders, autism, Asperger's, ADD, ADHD, eczema, asthma, all of these problems and sicknesses that we're seeing in runaway rates among our children today? Do those kids who weren't vaccinated, are they showing signs of this stuff? And I'm asked frequently by folks, why isn't the government doing this study?
And I don't know the answer to that. I'm more uncertain of that than I was when I started. I just don't get it. I think they would say, the government would say that many well-controlled major studies have shown no link, but again, they have not been at the fundamental level of never vaccinated versus vaccinated. They've been more or less vaccinated, or mercury in the vaccines and not mercury, or in another country, or, you know, susceptible to lots of different interpretations. So I can't speak for them. I can say that Representative Carolyn Maloney of New York just reintroduced a bill to force the Department of Health and Human Services to do exactly that study. And we'll see if it picks up some steam.
You also wrote about, Dan Olmsted is my guest, you also wrote about a medical practice in Chicago called Home First. What is that? Why is that significant?
Well, that is a very large medical practice that grew up around home birth. And a lot of the families who were attracted to it were sort of alternative medicine people who didn't favor vaccines. And in Illinois, it's pretty easy to get an exemption. And so he just had several thousand kids that he tracked over many years who were never vaccinated, and among those kids, according to him, there were zero cases of autism, or maybe one. The same thing with asthma. And these are, you know, pretty mainstream, diverse group of people who live in Chicago who could be studied, whose records are available. And one thing I pointed out was I saw him recently, you know, a couple years after I first wrote the story, and he said not one other reporter and not one public health person and not one pediatric group had called him to discuss this with him. So I don't know. What can we do?
Yeah, it's staggering to me.
Yeah.
Staggering that we are not seeing more interest and more of an aggressive search to find out what in the hell is happening to our children.
Well, I think one of the fatal blows to that curiosity came when the Institute of Medicine, which everyone considers to be, you know, an independent and nonpartisan group, said there was simply no convincing evidence of any relationship, and we should put our research money in better areas. And I'm sorry to say, I think that that was premature, and I think a lot of parents are pushing this fight forward, and they're tough, they're smart, they're the ones who brought this story forward, who are driving it. I think they are going to not go away. I, you know, not speaking for you, but I don't think you're going anywhere on this topic.
Absolutely not. Journalist, yeah, Dan Olmsted is my guest, and we're honored to have him here, the author of well over 100 columns over the last few years in the Age of Autism series, some of the very best reporting about the epidemic of autism here in America. Dan, the second theme in your, as a result of your work studying this issue, you write about is how journalists, your peers, have covered this story.
Well, that's right. I mean, that kind of flowed out of my observation about not following up in this medical practice in Chicago. And I don't think that, you know, the mainstream media is giving enough attention to what parents are saying. And not every parent believes that vaccines cause their child's autism. Not every parent witnessed an immediate regression after a vaccination, but some did. And, you know, this idea that we keep seeing on the evening news that, you know, scientists have ruled it out as a coincidence, well, I've talked to too many parents, Coy, who say their kids started having a reaction in the doctor's office after getting, you know, 7 vaccines in one day, and by the time they got home, they had a 105-degree fever, and they never spoke again, and they were autistic. And so, you know, what is wrong with journalists doing what I thought they always were supposed to do, which is go around and talk to people and listen to them and go into their homes? And when you do that, I think it becomes a more complicated issue than it's portrayed. And I don't know if advertising concerns or sort of the shrinking journalism money pot has cut back on investigative things or what it is. I again, I wish I had a better answer for you.
Dan Olmsted is my guest. Dan, I will tell you, I know journalists who have approached pediatricians here in Charlottesville to do interviews about vaccines, not about autism, but just specifically to ask them about the vaccine schedule.
Right.
Can you tell me how many shots you give, what the federal government vaccine schedule is? And they couldn't find a pediatrician to go on the record to even talk about vaccines.
Huh. I think some of the email I've gotten from other journalists when I call them in said, you know, they were suspicious too, and one reason they were suspicious was because so many people wouldn't go on the record because they were, you know, medical experts, doctors, scientists wouldn't go on the record because they were afraid of repercussions if they were critical at all of vaccinations. And, you know, I don't have a position on vaccination. I think that we don't want polio to come back. I don't think the issue really is whether we do or do not vaccinate our kids. I think the issue is there some aspect of, you know, medical interventions, including vaccines or whatever, that may be implicated here? If so, let's figure it out. Let's fix it. Let's keep vaccinating kids so we don't all die of diseases that we've conquered. But the idea that this is such a holy grail or third rail, you know, of public health policy that we can't even touch it is, I just think that's a mistake.
Yeah, and I will tell you, as a father, I'm outraged that we would live in a country where we're not supposed to ask questions about medicine our government requires us to give our children. I find that so unbelievably outrageous and dangerous. And I love one line from your column here. You wrote, and I hate to read your work back to you, but you wrote, my mind is made up about only one thing. Both vaccinations and autism are so important that definitive independent research needs to be done yesterday. And the fact that it hasn't should be making more journalists suspicious.
Yep, that's what I think. And I think there's a possibility here that, you know, public health policy has run away from its roots in common sense. I think the hepatitis B vaccination on the day of birth is a big question. I think, you know, whether the chickenpox vaccine being mandatory and now a follow-up shot, I think it's very fair to question these things and ask about them and think about them and review them. I don't have a problem with it, and if that makes me a menace to public health, then I'm a menace.
Journalist Dan Olmsted is my guest. This is News Radio 1070 WINA. Dan, you also wrote about a group of families in Olympia, Washington. And tell us now why this is significant, because I think a lot more people should know about this.
Well, I was contacted by a family out there who had a child with regressive autism, and they had noticed that their child and also some of the other kids seemed to have regressed after they got their MMR, mumps, measles, rubella combination shot, and their chickenpox shot, sort of on the same day or very close together, or even in some cases in the same shot when they were young, like 1 year, which is the earliest you can get that. And then as we looked into it, what was even more interesting was that these families shared another characteristic, which was that they had a weird history with the chickenpox virus. And chickenpox is part of the herpes family, and one woman, the grandmother, had herpes virus in her eyes, which is kind of strange. Her son, when he was 15, had shingles, which usually occurs in old people, and then his child got an experimental 4-in-1 vaccine like this and immediately got sick, just this kind of onset that I described earlier, regressed into autism. And so the issue there is whether there is some genetic susceptibility to some of these live viruses that could be causing damage. And as far as I could tell, that had never been looked at before these, you know, vaccines were all lumped together and given at the same time.
And this lumping all these vaccines together, we're seeing that people like Merck do this, but it's my understanding that they're pulling that product off the market.
Well, you know, they said that they have run out of chickenpox serum, or, you know, vaccine, and they need it for their other chickenpox shot, the single shot, and also for the shingles shot that they've recently introduced. And so they decided to suspend production of this 4-in-1 shot called ProQuad. This comes just, you know, a year or so after it was introduced and after I wrote about this potential problem. They say it's got nothing to do with it. They say that it'll be back. I say, I will take them at their word, but I'm going to be watching to see if that happens. Because if not, it may suggest something else that, you know, we'll just have to see.
Journalist Dan Olmsted is the author of the Age of Autism series, which has been published by UPI over the last few years. And perhaps one of the most significant themes that you have reported on, facts that you dug up yourself, no one else has known this, is you actually went back and looked at the very first cases of autism. And tell us about this. Tell us what you learned that no one else had known.
Well, I'm still looking, by the way. But there were 11 cases in the first report on autism, which was by a professor at Johns Hopkins. And I was able to identify the first three in that series of 11 and found a possible connection to mercury fungicides. One of the fathers was a forestry professor. One family lived in a town called Forest, Mississippi, that was being heavily harvested with trees and the Civilian Conservation Corps. And then the one that I think is, I think if there's a smoking gun that I may have come across, this is it. The father of case number two was a plant pathologist who I went down and looked at his archive at North Carolina State. I opened it up. The first paper was on mercury fungicides. And when I looked at what he was doing when his son was born in 1936, he was experimenting with the new ethyl mercury, organic mercury fungicides, which is exactly the kind of mercury that's used in vaccines. And it may be a coincidence, but I doubt it.
I get goosebumps when you say that. That is amazing. I mean, that is unbelievable that one of the very first documented cases of autism, the baby's father was working on a new fungicide called ethyl mercury, which was subsequently used in vaccines.
Yeah. I don't think it's a coincidence. I think if I had only dug that document out, it would have been worth all the effort. And again, that's something that hasn't gotten much attention, but it may. And as I say, I'm still looking. I'm hot on the trail of two of those other early cases, and I think I may find some other interesting stuff. But yes, the fact that mercury was present at least one of the first two cases. I mean, come on.
Dan Olmsted, formerly of UPI and moving on to bigger and better things. And Dan, we got to get out of here and get to CBS News, so we'll look forward to talking to you again very soon.
I sure appreciate it, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.